Hello, this is Nathan Ruggles with you, and this is The Point of Pittsburgh. Thank you so much for joining us here today. I'd like to extend some thanks out to the IBEW Local 5, as well as the Operating Engineers Local 66 for their support. So it's my pleasure to have with us in studio here today our historian here in Pittsburgh and the part of the Battle Homestead Foundation, Charlie McAllister.
Great to be here.
And of course, the former International VP of SEIU, Rosemary Trump.
Very nice to be here.
Well, it's always great to have you
really
both
is.
Here in the studio to talk
the
about
eve
the
eve of Christmas.
That's right, in this holiday season to talk about all the latest and greatest, the good news, bad news coming out here in the greater Pittsburgh area. And Rosemary, I know that you'd like to focus a little bit on our paper here and the letters to the editor there in the Pittsburgh Post Gazette.
You know, it's the end of the year, and we really should talk about our blessings. And one of our blessings in this community is the fact that we do have a really reputable newspaper, the Pittsburgh Post Gazette, and they are not shy about including very thoughtful, constructive letters to the editor. And I thought the one from Kathy Lopez from Crafton last Wednesday, December the 13th, really asked some poignant questions, particularly in light of the fact that there have been some developments of Duquesne University looking at a study to examine how it can be closer to the community and be a leader in the community. How the Pitt grad students are filing for a union election at the University of Pittsburgh.
That's right.
How this all comes together,
how
this fits together. And what Kathy says here is that, she points out that, everybody wants to talk about, particularly our president, how, there's a banner day for the stock market, that growth is at an all-time high in the economy, that unemployment is an all-time low. But what she says, hey, for me, a working person and all other people similarly situated, we're paying 100% more for eggs this month, and we're paying 30% more in utility bills this year. And that, gas prices don't go down, that they're continuing to go up to fill up their car to be able to go to work. And that, that wages are not increasing for those of us at the bottom fast enough to keep up with the rising cost of living. And she asked the following questions. Who will speak for our economy for us? Who will stand up and make sure record profits translate into higher wages? Who will help the economy of real working people instead of major shareholders and corporations? Well, guess what, Kathy? who traditionally had that responsibility from the period of 1935 until about 1980, were unions. Unions did a very effective job at standing up for the working class and negotiating increases in wages that would keep up with the cost of living, if not exceed the cost of living, so that working families could get ahead, that they would have a little bit of money to save for their children's education and for their retirement and for their leisure years. But, there's been a 40-year attack on unions for the last 80 years, where the Republican Party is relentless with all this anti-union legislation, keeping unions on the defensive.
You mean since 1980?
Since 1980, right. since the Patco strike, frankly. And consequently, when she asked that question, it really should be the unions. But since the big behemoth employers are the public sector, universities, and medical facilities, you would think that Jeffrey Romoff and Ken Gormley, who's the president of Duquesne University and the president of Pitt University, as well as the local Republican majority in the state legislature, would step up and speak for working families. But we know that they are not. And so the question that I'm going to ask President Ken Gormley, since he commissioned a study to be undertaken by their university based on their founding principle of the Spirton Brothers of the Catholic Church, who in 1878 created Duquesne University to be able to serve the immigrant poor community, particularly in education, he's asking that a study be founded or required so that how can the university and the students and the faculty and the administration become a greater part of the community. And I would like to challenge him by saying, you know, look at how unions have helped the community fulfill the spirit in Brothers since 1878. That when was the period that immigrants and low-wage workers and the impoverished really were able to improve their lives and to have the university, Duquesne University, truly grow? What period of time was that? And I think they will find that the answer is 1935 to 1980, the same period in which unions were empowered to speak on behalf of those struggling immigrants, of those struggling workers, of those struggling communities, and that there was upward mobility of the African-American community during that period. And there was upward mobility for the low class. And the answer was not because, you know, any one individual said we should raise the wages and benefits of the workers, but because unions were there to advocate.
That's right, and organize and advocate and make it happen. It's no coincidence that that time.
Exactly, and to collectively bargain. And therefore, when they come to that conclusion that they would, that he would hope, I would hope that Mr. Gormley, President Gormley of Duquesne University, would call up Leo Girard of the United Steelworkers and said, you know, we've had this ongoing dispute about whether or not our faculty should be permitted to organize. They express their choice. Let's talk about this, and let's come to an agreement, and let's negotiate a contract. And having done that, setting the example, is to call up the University of Pittsburgh's president and say, we should talk with the University of Pittsburgh about the grad students who just petitioned, 2,000 grad students just petitioned with the United Steelworkers, again with President Leo Girard. How can we facilitate an early election so that the grad students can and truly go to the ballots without being intimidated to make a choice about whether or not they want to be represented by a union or not? This is a way that Ken Gormley, Duquesne University, can serve this community by leading the way to having this community once again be represented by strong labor unions advocating for the improvement of the wages, hours, and benefits of the workers of this community so that it will stop the impoverishment of the working class, as well as those who are not able to work.
So if he's looking for a place to start, he can start at home.
Exactly.
Right at his own university.
Right. Precisely. And look about his labor relations with his workers.
We do need to take a break in a moment. Charlie, did you have any thoughts on something on that topic?
Absolutely, but we can come back and talk about
okay,
it.
Okay, all right. Sure. We'll get it when we come back. So we are in the midst of the Points of Pittsburgh here with Rosemary Trump and Charlie McCollister. This is Nathan Ruggles. We'll be right back.
For most of us, food is not just fodder to get us through the day. It touches us emotionally, culturally, personally. We see this special connection when we gather family and friends for holiday meals. But it's often in the worst of times that our deep relationship to food reveals itself most powerfully. In August, for example, after Hurricane Harvey devastated Houston and the Texas Gulf Coast, the sure signs of people's resilience came not only from the sound of power tools, but also from the aromas of barbecue wafting across a neighborhood, or a big pot of shrimp gumbo simmering on a butane burner set up on a street corner and dished out free to anyone who needed or wanted some. As New York Times reporter Kim Severson wrote about flooded-out Houstonians, no matter what, cooks are going to cook. After the hurricane, 134,000 homes in the 10-county area around the Bayou City were destroyed or swamped with muck and polluted water. The emotional and cultural impact, Severson wrote, is most keenly felt at mealtimes. The kitchen is the heartbeat of a home and, by extension, of a community. So, despite the obstacles, Houstonians cooked, improvising with ice chests, hot plates, and crock pots to create kitchens and second-floor bedrooms, outdoor decks, or any dry spots they could find. She wrote about 70-year-old Al Marcus. 4 feet of bayou water destroyed his kitchen, yet only days later, he had fired up his backyard smoker and cooked 140 pounds of brisket to provide sustenance and a serving of normalcy to the families and volunteers who were stripping waterlogged sheetrock from storm-damaged homes. "What else am I going to do?" Al asked. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the true nature of food. It's not just another consumer commodity. Food is us, socially as well as biologically.
Somos la Unión Internacional de los Panaderos, Confiteros y Trabajadores de Tabaco y los Molineros de Grano luchando por los trabajos americanos. Nabisco, fabricante de marcas icónicas como el Oreo, Ritz Crackers y Chips Ahoy, ha ganado la fortuna en América y su respuesta patriótica ha sido enviar los trabajos americanos a México. Como resultado, los consumidores en los Estados Unidos siguen boicoteando los productos hechos en México. Ingresos corporativos han bajado en todo Norteamericana, los consumidores están enviando un mensaje muy fuerte y claro. Ahora los líderes religiosos de todas las religiones a través de los Estados Unidos están pidiendo una investigación del modelo de negocio de Nabisco y han programado un tour de 6 ciudades para investigar el asunto de manera más profunda. En el mismo momento en que las negociaciones de NAFTA están en la mente de todos, la comunidad religiosa comenzará a hablar de los trabajadores, los políticos y otros líderes religiosos con la intención de discutir el exilio de trabajos por Nabisco desde una perspectiva moral y ética y publicarán ampliamente sus hallazgos. El BCTGM y su socio Justicia Obrera Interconfesional piden a toda la gente de fe y conciencia social que se unan a esta lucha contra la explotación por Nabisco de trabajadores en los Estados Unidos y México. Millones ya están boicoteando los productos de Nabisco hechos en México y ya está afectando sus ganancias de la empresa. Únase a nuestra lucha por la justicia moral y económica. Únase a nosotros en www.fightforamericanjobs.com. www.fightforamericanjobs.com.
And welcome back to The Point of Pittsburgh. This is Nathan Ruggles. Thanks for being with us here today, spending the afternoon time with us. We'd like to recognize real quick the PSCA as well as the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO for their support for this and all our programming here. It's my pleasure to have in studio with us both Rosemary Trump and
Good to be here. Thank you.
And right before the break, Rosemary was talking about our local paper and the issue of union prosperity in connection to community prosperity, and particularly calling out Duquesne University for whether or not they're going to step up and support that or not. Charlie, I know you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, well. Really. I mean, because the new president there had called on that what needed to be done is to, you know, recall the vision of the Spiritans, or the, what they used to be called, the Holy Ghost Fathers, when Duquesne was actually organized. But, I mean, I have had numbers of contacts with Spiritans over the years in Haiti and in Africa, and in Haiti, their work has been terrific in terms of the poorest of the poor, and in literacy and in health care. And Duquesne University has, through the Haiti Solidarity Committee, has helped set up micro lending and helped train their people in banking principles and stuff. They have Fonds Cosé is huge, the second largest micro lending in the world after the one in Bangladesh.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and
it's impressive.
And a lot of the training, once they got up to really a level running a bank in Haiti, the Duquesne offered to take a couple of students every year and train them and how to, you know, do the accounts and keep track of everything. And these Fon Kozay is basically women. That women pay back at 95-98%, men about 60% in most underdeveloped countries. And what they do is they create groups of small groups of 10 to dozen women, and they police each other to pay back, and they help each other out. And they get small micro loans, but allow them to enter the markets and to sell things, to be able to buy some stuff to begin with, and then teach them. And they teach them literacy, they teach them accounts, you know, basic level accounting, and then they can tap into these lending institutions and keep track of what's going on. And so Duquesne has had a proud tradition on that. Charles Owen Rice, the labor priest of Pittsburgh, you know, one of the 50 most influential of Duquesne graduates, honored as such back a number of years ago. I mean, he was the labor priest of Pittsburgh, was a fierce unionist, and ran a labor school, a labor training school for negotiators at Duquesne for at least 4 or 5 years after World War II.
So there's some traditions there.
There's long traditions there and deep traditions, and should be. But for them to have blocked the adjunct faculty from organizing after seemingly at the beginning saying we would accept what they decide to do, then turning on it, and then appealing to religious principles to block union organization. Yes, because somehow they might give protection to somebody who is not living up to the Catholic principles of the university. So it became an ideological thing. And this came right out of right-wing think tanks that were trying to get various Catholic schools, along with other religious denominations, to resist unionization of faculty on the basis of that this would somehow corrupt or undermine the religious mission.
What about undermining their own traditions that you were just describing?
Exactly. And the NLRB has said, yeah, you can carve out the theology faculty. That you're right there. I mean, that they shouldn't be organized in the same way, because they're all priests anyway, so they're organized in a different way and have a lot less freedom of movement in many ways. But on the other hand, that, you know, people teaching English and teaching history, et cetera, should have the right to bargain. And there are three unions on the Duquesne campus. I mean, the operator, stationary engineers, the security, and I can't remember the other
janitorial.
One. Janitorial, of course.
Okay, all organized.
And so, food service.
Yeah, so there's a number of, and they've
there's
been bargaining with these
now
for years, yeah. But they have this. They decided that they could use an ideological reason not to allow their adjunct faculty, you know, making very low wages and really needing protection. So,
really,
well, yeah, I agree very much with Rosemary's call to you know, respect the voice of these workers, because it's very, very important. And I know she has that letter from Tammy Genagel about what unions do and what they have done for women workers and the operating engineers,
yeah, where they have an apprentice program and you can train for a job that pays a living wage, $60,000 or more a year that you can earn. And she
above
points
the
out,
median, absolutely.
Yes, with the operating engineers, Local 66. And she had a letter to the editor where women should consider an IUOE apprenticeship and come into the fold, that, you know, work is booming at the moment. And they're looking, you know, to diversify and to please come and apply. So, you know, unions play a very vital role in training workers and upgrading workers, including women workers, and this is a wonderful opportunity. And so, you know, because unions have played such an important and vital role in creating a middle class and providing dignity in work for this community in Western Pennsylvania, has such a vital labor history in terms of the struggle of workers to, in fact, be able to make this country a true democratic country where it works for...
Small D democratic, right?
Exactly. to make it work for all, and so that by the sweat of your brow and the labor of your hands or your mind, you could earn enough to support your family and live in dignity and not be a charitable cause or case where somebody, a church order would have to worry about you. It's time for the universities and the medical facilities of this great nation pay back what they owe to the taxpayers that come from the working class. Because after all, much of their funding does come from tax dollars.
That's right.
For the whether it's the building of their facilities or
And the community support is there as well, right?
Exactly.
For these sort of institutions.
Yeah, maybe just a final thing. I know we don't have a lot of time, but I'm sure Rosemary can chime in here too. Is that we went to New York City and I had a chance to go to Ellis Island and appreciate the immigrants. But what we went for was to see our good friend Mark Rylance. Who has had such a deep interest in homestead and its meaning, and was here in July putting on a dramatic presentation on the homestead strike. And he remains as deeply concerned and interested, and he's almost certainly going to get a Tony nomination for Farinelli in The King. He plays the king, but a man torn between his obligations as a king and needing to go to war and lots of things he doesn't want to do, and his desire to just be a good human being, love the stars, listen to beautiful music, and be kind to people. This, and for that reason, he's considered crazy. And he puts on a masterful performance and something that we enjoyed immensely.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, and just as a final note to conclude that if we're worried about if people in the public sector or at a non-executive level in the healthcare university, Cecil, is overpaid, I can only share with you that Mr. Peduto, our mayor, Bill Peduto, lost his chief of staff this last week, who was making $109,000 because he could not afford to stay there for that amount of money because he has three kids that he has to worry about educating. So if you can't make it on $109,000, how do you make it on $9 or $10 an hour in this world? I mean, seriously. So if we're going to have a high-quality public service and high-quality healthcare system and education system, then we need to have people paid, the majority of people paid, a decent salary.
A living wage.
A living wage with good benefits. And the only way that that has ever happened is when the labor movement was strong, unions were strong, and had the ability to bargain with their employers to require they be paid a living wage.
And have the political power to help make it happen
exactly.
In that sphere as well, right?
Right.
Well, very good. Well, thank you both so much for being here with the Point of Pittsburgh. Rosemary Trump and Charlotte McAllister with us here today. This is Nathan Ruggles. Thanks so much for joining us.